There seems to be two reasons why people stop taking Wegovy or are hesitant to take Wegovy for weight loss. And those two reasons are money and side effects. That's what I hear time and again when I talk to people. I can't do anything about the money because these companies are going to charge what they want, and it depends what country you live in as to how much they're charging you. In Australia, we're lucky. We get Wegovy and Ozempic at a cheaper price than, say, the US, which pay a fortune for these drugs. But today, I'm really diving into the side effects of Wegovy. I'm not a doctor. I'm not trying to give advice, medical advice in any way or shape or form. But I am going to be talking to someone today who has taken semaglutide for weight loss and her side effects. Those side effects crop up again and again and again. And some of them you've heard about. Some of them are in the news. Some of them you mightn't heard about. Some of them involved in lawsuits. And some of them seem to be like a hidden secret. Like everyone who takes these drugs seems to know this is what happens. It just seems to be part and parcel of taking the drug. This is Investigating Ozempic, and I'm Bern. Welcome to episode 7, Wegovy Does What? Before I get started, I'd really encourage you to go back and have a listen to the previous 6 episodes, because this podcast is like a jigsaw puzzle. There are many puzzle pieces to look at to finally be able to understand the full picture. Now, I'm not going to run through them all this time, but I would really encourage you to go back and start at the beginning. So I'm going to look at 2 things today. The first thing I'm going to look at are the listed side effects that you see on the writing, that when you get a package of Wegovy or a package of Ozempic, there is within it a pamphlet, and it's quite large actually. You fold it out and it just keeps folding out and keeps folding out. It's really quite big. Within that pamphlet has a whole heap of side effects and warnings, as well as information on the drugs. The other thing I'm going to look at is I'm going to look at some of the clinical trials, and I'm going to look at, well, how often do those side effects happen? What are the percentages that they're showing in their trials? So that's what I'm going to look at today. One quick note for those that are new to this podcast. Ozempic and Wegovy are the same drug, the same GLP-1 drug. It's called semaglutide. Wegovy just comes in a higher dosage. Ozempic is typically prescribed for diabetes, and Wegovy is prescribed for weight loss typically. I've got in front of me an Ozempic pamphlet, which comes in with the Ozempic pen. It's about the same size as the Wegovy pamphlet. Now, when you take it out of the packaging, it's about 2 inches by 5 inches. But when you open it up, it just keeps opening and keeps opening and keeps opening. It is maybe a little longer than 0.5 meter square. And it's printed on both sides. So there's a lot of information in it. The side effects listed on this pamphlet are general effects: decreased appetite, headache, vomiting, indigestion, burping, wind, flatulence, constipation, heartburn, painful or swollen stomach, weight loss, injection site reactions, fast heartbeat, feeling tired, feeling dizzy, changes to your vision or eyesight, unpleasant, abnormal or altered taste sensation, increased in pancreas blood test results. Hypoglycemia, which is when you have low blood sugar. I've had that before, and you can feel cool and sweaty and sick and have changes in your vision. You could be quite shaky, which is what I've had. Other effects they have are gallstones, inflamed gallbladder, dehydration. Then under serious side effects, they have acute pancreatitis, which is an inflamed pancreas, allergic reactions, which such as skin rashes and shortness of breath, swelling of the face, lips and tongues, fast pulse. The third one they have is acute kidney injury, which is passing water less often, swelling in legs, ankles or feet, feeling short of breath, feeling very tired, feeling confused, feeling sick. That's what they've got listed on the Ozempic pamphlet. Now I'm going to have a look at the Wegovy pamphlet and see if there's anything else on that pamphlet, because it is the same drug. It's semaglutide, which is the same drug that's found in Ozempic and Wegovy. It's just that Wegovy is found in a higher dose. So I've gone to Novo Nordisk's site and I've looked at the important safety information for Wegovy. And one of the first things that pops up, it says Wegovy may cause serious side effects, including possible thyroid tumours, including cancer. It says, tell your healthcare provider if you get a lump or swelling in your neck, hoarseness, trouble swallowing or shortness of breath. These may be symptoms of thyroid cancer. I believe this has been found in studies with rodents. It is not known if Wegovy will cause thyroid tumours or a type of thyroid cancer in people. There's other warnings saying, before using Wegovy, tell your healthcare provider if you've had any medical conditions such as problems with your pancreas or kidneys, if you've had depression, suicidal thoughts or mental health issues, if you're scheduled to have surgery or other procedures that use anaesthesia, are pregnant or plan to become pregnant, are breastfeeding or plan to breastfeed. Then they've listed the possible side effects of Wegovy. Most of these look like the same as Ozempic, which is pancreatitis, gallbladder problems, low blood sugar, kidney problems, severe stomach problems they've listed here. Stomach problems, sometimes severe, have been reported in people who use Wegovy. Serious allergic reactions, changes in vision in people with type 2 diabetes, increased heart rate, depression or thoughts of suicide. Food or liquid getting into the lungs during surgery or other procedures that cause anesthesia or deep sleepiness. I have heard about that and we're going to talk about that a bit more later. But the most common side effects are, again, nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, constipation, all of the gastro things that we've heard about time and time again. But there are a lot of side effects. But now I want to go and look at the clinical trials and we'll see, well, how many people actually suffered from those side effects in the clinical trials? What is the likelihood of those happening? The clinical trial that I'm going to choose to look at is the longest clinical trial. It's one that went for 2 years and it was done for Wegovy. It's called 2-Year Research Study Investigating How Well Semaglutide Works in People Suffering from Overweight or Obesity, Step 5. So all of the weight loss trials for Wegovy were called Step and the Ozempic trials were called Sustain. That was their trademark name. This trial went for 2 years from 2018. It said it completed in 2021, which is not 2 years, 3 years. Maybe they were just getting their crap together and then actually needed to do a few admin things before starting it. And the amount of people in the study were 304. It was held in 41 locations, a lot of them in the US, Canada, Hungary, Italy, Spain, and people had to be over 18 years of age at the time. I'm going to put a link to this study in the show notes so you can have a little look yourself. And I'll go to where it says results posted. You can see that when you click on the link. There was a total of 22 people that didn't complete that study. The average age of participants was 47 years old. and they used 80% women in the study, approximately. I'm just looking at the semaglutide 2.4. That's the dosage they gave them, eventually gave them. But yeah, they used significantly not more women than men. And I went over that last week in the podcast, and that's because women tend to have a stronger reaction to semaglutide, and they tend to drop more weight on semaglutide, which is quite different to how it is in real life. I mean, usually men drop weight faster than women, but not on semaglutide. I'm just going to go down to adverse events, because that's what we're talking about today. An adverse event is a side effect. We're going to look at the serious side effects, serious adverse events. The people taking 2.4 milligrams of semaglutide had a 7.89% risk of side effects. And the side effects that they listed are cardiac disorders. There was one person that had that. There were two people that had serious gastrointestinal disorders, four people that had hepatobiliary disorders. Then they had 5 people that had infections. They had one person that had a musculoskeletal disorder, one person with a psychiatric disorder, one person with a renal disorder, one person with a respiratory disorder, which was a pulmonary embolism, and one person that had a deep vein thrombosis, which is a blood clot. So they're the serious ones that happened in that trial. Then I looked at the other that's not including the serious adverse events. In total, there were 141 people of the 152 people participating, so 92.76% of them suffered from side effects or adverse events. The most common by far was the gastrointestinal disorders. There were an enormous amount of gastrointestinal disorders. There were 627 complaints from 141 people, which is a lot. That's in total. Now, remember when they calculate these percentages, what they do is they take the total number of people that participated in the trial and they work out the percentage of side effects from that. And when you deduct the number of people that departed the trial, that left for whatever reason, that 92.76 figure would have gone up. When I look at the clinical trial, this particular clinical trial over 2 years, by far the largest number of side effects comes from the gastric one. You can go and have a look at it too. It's a link's in the study notes. There's another way of looking at these trial results in more detail, and that is to go to the Novo Nordisk site and download the 1,611 pages of writing on this trial. So I did that, had a little look, because I wanted to see exactly what the issues were and in what percentage. In total, serious adverse events and normal adverse events, in other words, serious and mild side effects, affected 96.1% of people taking 2.4 milligrams of semaglutide. There are pages on the gastrointestinal issues listed in the other trial as well. This document goes into more detail. So, for example, when they say psychiatric disorders, and they had just a figure in the previous one, here I can see that the most common psychiatric disorder was anxiety. I'm going to put a link to this document in the show notes so that you can see it. In total, the number of people that suffered from gastrointestinal disorders or side effects was 82.2% of people taking 2.4 milligrams of semaglutide. So that's a lot. You can see that the majority of their issues seem to be gastrointestinal. One of the side effects that all the scientists seem to know about who deal with GLP-1s are the increased pulse rate. So if, when I look at that 1,600-page clinical trial, there's a few pages dedicated to that. It says that increased pulse rate is a known side effect associated with GLP-1 treatment. And they said the pulse rate in the semaglutide arm increased in the first 16 weeks of treatment and remained elevated. It remained elevated by 4.14 beats per minute. They also say that the increase in pulse observed in the semaglutide group did not appear to be associated with an increased risk of cardiac disorders. It seems to be just a thing. You get an increased pulse rate or beats per minute to your heart when you're taking GLP-1. And I don't think a lot of people know that, but I think it's an interesting thing. The other thing that is interesting is the slowing down of your food as it's processed through your stomach. There's been a few articles about how people have gone in to have surgery and they haven't been able to have their surgery because they've still got a significant amount of food in their stomach. The last thing I want to mention is that in the summary of adverse events on page 145, 1,611 pages, there's a line that says a higher proportion of subjects in the semaglutide arm reduced their dose, 11.2% reduced their dose. And then there's another figure for people that temporarily interrupted treatment, which is 14.5% of people interrupted treatment. And then for people that permanently discontinued treatment, there was 5.9%. These were due to AEs. So if I add up 11.2 plus 14.5 plus 5.9, that gives me well over 30% that either reduced their dose or interrupted treatment or discontinued treatment, which I think is pretty considerable. If you listen to the last podcast, I kept banging on about individualized dosages for individual people. I just want to introduce you now to Shauna, who is a lovely woman who's willing to tell her story about taking Ozempic not once but twice, and I hope you enjoy it. Shauna, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, great. Shauna, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Shauna Jensen. I'm from Sydney, Australia. And really happy to be here to talk on this podcast about Ozempic.
Thanks, Shauna. I'm just wondering if we can just jump straight in and talk about why you first tried Ozempic and how that came to be.
Firstly, let me start off by saying that I have always been overweight my entire life, and I'm 70 now, and I feel like I've been on a diet and struggling with my weight for my entire life. So a couple of years ago, now 3.5 years ago it would be, maybe closer to 4 years ago, I had started to put on a lot of weight again. And I'm only a short woman and I wasn't feeling good and my clothes sizes were going not in the direction that I would have liked them to have gone. And I was trying to be body positive and I just didn't like how I felt. I didn't like what was going on. The thought of going on another diet again in my life was just almost traumatizing.
Yeah.
So I went to see my doctor and she said to me, look, I've got this client who's a patient who has tried this drug called Ozempic, and it's not specifically designed for weight loss. It's a diabetes drug, but they're having a lot of success with weight loss. Here's all the information that I can give you about it. Go away and read about it and see if you want to give it a try. It's a once a week injectable. So I did read up on it and I looked into it cost-wise and I decided that I would give it a crack. So I did, and I used it successfully for weight loss for approximately 10 or 11 months. And then I had surgery and I went off it to have the surgery. And well, so that was the reason why I used it. That's the answer to your question. So
yeah,
that was why I went on it. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of information out there at the time, apart from what you were given in the literature from the drug company. These are what side effects are, and this is the worst case scenario. Best case scenario, you won't have any side effects, but you could possibly have these side effects. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And did you find anything after you had your first injection? Did you feel anything different?
I can't say that I felt very different after the first injection. It was probably around about the second or third injection. Honestly, I can't remember. But I just was so nauseous.
Uh-huh.
So nauseous. It was like morning sickness nausea. Like, just feeling gross. And, yeah, just feeling really sick. And then that continued for probably 4 or 5 months, possibly 6 out of that 10 or 11 months that I was on it. And I also suffered terribly from constipation. And when I wasn't having constipation, I was having diarrhea. And of course, I was talking to my doctor all this time. She didn't just give it to me and go off into the sunset. You know, she's a very caring practitioner, and we discussed the effects that I was having, and I decided I'd just stick with it, and I was seeing weight loss. It did, you know, certainly cut down my appetite by half at least.
Yes.
Hey.
And how fast was that weight loss that you were seeing?
It wasn't really fast at all.
Okay.
It was slow. I could go weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and see nothing.
Yeah.
Then step on a scale and I'd be 2.5 pounds lighter.
Do you remember what dosage you were on at that time?
I started on the 0.25 and I stayed on 0.25 for 2 months. And then I went up to 0.5 for a month, and then I went up to 1 mil. That was.
And did you find that you got sicker, or did you get more side effects as you increased your dosage?
I was more constipated. I suffered a lot from nausea and constipation were my top two. The nausea wasn't that severe that I vomited, but it was constant. I don't think I had a day where I didn't say, oh, so sick, blah, feel hideous. It was just this constant, and I had headaches, and I had I wasn't dieting, and because I refused to go on a diet because I think the diet industry is bullshit. But I was conscious of eating well. And having the right amount of protein and having the right amount of fruit and certainly drinking the right amount of water. The water was imperative to keeping everything moving, but it didn't seem to make that much difference. And I did end up having to have a lot of laxative action going on because I was just, you know, my bowel just wouldn't. Was just, you know, stuffed, and it, you know, it wasn't pleasant.
No. So over that first time that you tried Ozempic, you went up to 1. That was your highest dosage?
Yes.
Yeah. And how much weight did you approximately lose?
I lost about 22 kilos in about 11 months.
Okay. What happened then?
Then I went off the drug because I had a bilateral knee operation, knee replacement, and I went off the drug and it started to become difficult to get then. It had already started to become difficult to get because by this stage, now we're talking about 2 years ago now, it was starting to get scarce and it was starting I was starting to have to ring around to pharmacies to see if anybody had any supply and go hither and thither to get the drug.
Did you find any judgment from any of those pharmacists because you're not diabetic?
Yes, I did. There was one pharmacist that was a bit nasty to me who basically waved all these prescriptions in front of me and said, well, we've got all these people in front of you and, you know, you're not diabetic. So in my knowledge, I could be wrong, but the Therapeutic Goods Association was advising due to the shortage that pharmacists should use their discretion. But I also had to have compassion for people who were type 2 diabetic who needed the Ozempic. I did have this bit of a conundrum going on in my brain because I've read up a lot about diabetes because I have a very close family friend who suddenly got type 1 diabetes. But also, I was in a Facebook Ozempic group, an Australian Facebook Ozempic group. First of all, I was in an American one, and then I went on to an Australian one. And there were a lot of people using Ozempic, getting it from a telehealth consult with a doctor that they didn't know. You know, I just need to lose 15 kilos. I just need to lose 10 kilos. But there were a lot of people on there like me who were looking at needing to get their weight down by 30, 40 kilos, you know, like a big percentage of their weight. And I know that there was a lot of backlash about people just going, well, if you just need to lose 5 kilos, surely you could just, you know, get onto light and easy or something and leave the drug for people who really need it or whatever. But everybody had a valid reason. But there were a lot of people on that Facebook page who were having major success using Ozempic in conjunction with a very low calorie diet. And, you know, if you go on a very low calorie diet without Ozempic, you're going to lose weight.
That's right.
100%. 100%. So what the Ozempic was doing for those people, I guess, was turning off the food noise in their head and stopping them feeling hungry. And so they were able to deal with their 800 calories a day rubbish and lose weight. Well, good luck to them. Great. Fantastic. Yeah. It was really interesting to read the number of people who were experiencing the same symptoms as myself, the constipation, the nausea, the diarrhea, the not having a lot of weight loss and then having a bit of weight loss and then not having anything, plateauing for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I think I probably went for 8 weeks without a weight loss, without a drop at one point. Yeah. And I was just like, why am I doing this to myself?
So you stopped Ozempic and you had your operation.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
And then I decided, well, after I was mobile, because I was immobile I was, you know, recovering and kind of couldn't do a lot of exercise and everything, couldn't do a lot of walking. Oh, it was limited for several weeks, for, you know, probably a couple of months. And I noticed that the weight started creeping back on. I started getting into – at first I didn't. At first I was like, I don't feel – I feel like I'm still on Ozempic. I felt like, oh, I've changed my habits. This has really changed me. But I didn't realize that the Ozempic was staying in my system for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that the weight was starting to creep back on and my clothes again. And I was like, oh, God, I've got to go back on it. So I went back on it and didn't have as much nausea, but the constipation was real and it was not good.
I'm just curious, what were you eating on? Were you having like a high fiber diet? You know, were you eating lots of veggies and fruits?
A lot of vegetables. I was eating like a person. Uh-huh. I was eating mindfully, consciously. I'm not a fast food eater. I might eat fast food twice a year, if at all. Like if you were to say to me, let's go and get fish and chips, I'd have to think about that. Because, okay. Yeah, I don't have a gallbladder.
For how long?
probably. No, but, you know, I don't have a gallbladder, so I have to, my body processes fat differently because my liver has to do everything. So high fat, I love fish and chips, don't get me wrong. I would love that. But I would like, what have I eaten today and what am I going to eat and will it be okay and will it sit with me and where's the nearest toilet? That's the way I have to think.
Is there a particular food that is a weakness for you or is there something that
you love? Sugar is my bitch. Sugar is not, I don't like her. She's a bitch. No, I really like sugar and I'm not a binge eater. Uh-huh. So I could open, for instance, a packet of Tim Tams and I might have two. Yep. And I'll put the rest away and I might have two a day till that packet's gone. So
that's remarkable restraint.
That's the way that I am. But you know, like at the end of the night after dinner, I like to have dessert. So I might have an ice cream. Or I might have some chocolate, or I might have an ice cream and some chocolate, but it wouldn't be a whole block of chocolate. That's not me. I am definitely addicted to sugar. I don't have that voice in my head that when I wake up in the middle of the night, I think, oh, my God, there's some Tim Tams in the fridge. Sometimes I forget they're there. I'm not a big drinker. I don't drink a lot of alcohol. I don't drink soft drinks. My genetic makeup is that I've just always been overweight and, you know, it's not from lack of trying, let me tell you. And So with the Ozempic, going back on the Ozempic the second time, there was a big shortage of it. I think I went on it for maybe 2 months. Maybe three. I might have been able to get a third pen. I just couldn't get it. I was not prepared to spend the money to do the Mounjaro or Saxenda because I just couldn't afford it and I didn't want to be injecting every day. And I was just like, oh, my God, okay, I'll go off it again and maybe I'll look at it again. And I discussed it with my family and you know, my daughter said to me, look, you know, if you go on it, you're going to have to be on it for the rest of your life. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go on it. And then I went back on it. And then I was like, no, I'm going to go on it. So then maybe a couple of months later, a few months later, I went back on it earlier this year. And I went on it for about 3 months. I didn't see any change in my weight, but I saw a change in my bodily functions, you know, my bowel movements. I was constipated. Yep. And I was like, I can't stand this. I felt like I was as much of a slave to that I could easily become as much of a slave to that as I would to the diet industry.
Yeah.
And logical brain was telling me to just stop it and just, you're 70 years old. This is who you are. I don't have high blood pressure. I don't have heart issues. I'm very healthy. I walk between 5 and 10 kilometers every day. Even though I'm overweight, touch wood, I'm pretty healthy. So, you know, I've got this far. So, you know, hopefully I'll get another 15 years out of me without having to rely on taking some drug that nobody knows what the long-term effects are. And to be honest, I feel like the time that I went on Ozempic has impacted on my health internally without me really knowing. I mean, I can't say that it's 100% accurate, but I had a colonoscopy recently and my specialist said to me, you've got so much diverticuli in your colon. And I knew that I had some, but now it's full of it. And that is from being constipated. It just exacerbates it. And so I put that down to an effect from being
Did your doctor explain to you when before you took it that one of the more common side effects are gastric side effects? Do you know if that was an issue, you know, if that was made clear to you?
Honestly, it was such a long time ago that I can't remember. I remember the conversation vaguely as being, this is what it is. This is what the side effects can be. Go away and read up on it and get back to me and see what you think, which is what I at the time, there wasn't a lot of information apart from what, is it
Novo Nordisk.
There was really only the information there from them. And so you just had to go, okay, well, this is the risk that I'm going to take. These are the side effects. Hopefully I won't get them. But I did. And I know that there are a lot of people that have no side effects.
Would you do it all again or would you not?
No. In a fairy tale land with no side effects whatsoever and, you know, being able to afford it, would I? Yes, in a fairy tale land, in a fantasy world. But no, I think that I've learned that that it's not for me. It's not the right drug for me. And I gave it a good crack and I think it has impacted on me negatively physically and financially. You know, it's $135 a month that I had to find. And, you know, I have pretty much a fixed income being a pensioner and it's not on the, you know, PBS. So it was expensive. And some chemists charged, once a chemist charged me $220 for it.
Seriously?
They were a small independent pharmacy.
$227.
And I went And I went to another smaller pharmacy that was not in my area, that was in the council area that where I live, but not in my, you know, immediate vicinity. And they didn't charge me that. And they were an independent, you know, the chains all charged $135 to $145, but the small independent one in my local area charged $220, and I didn't go back there. But I had some other friends who were using Ozempic, and they came up from Sydney to buy it because they couldn't get it in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know if there were ever any discussions? I mean, I know it was a couple of years ago, but I'm wondering if there were ever any discussions to actually reduce from the minimum dose, like to act, you know, if you were feeling sick on the low dose, to go even less than that.
Yeah, it was never discussed with me, with my doctor, about lowering the dose, and it's never suggested in any of the literature that I read from the manufacturer to lower the dose. And it was only through that Facebook group that I learned as much as I did about, you know, using a different dose and lowering the dose. And people were like, well, if you're feeling that sick, you're on too high a dose. I'm like, I'm on the lowest dose. I was on 0.2. Mm. That was the lowest dose that you were given.
That they recommended, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, there were people who in that group who I used to find being a bit patronizing, who weren't suffering side effects. But, you know, maybe their side effects were that they were just being bitchy. Maybe that was their affecting their perspective because they were, you know, feeling a bit high and mighty because they didn't have side effects. But I know that there were a lot of people that were on that who just said, oh, my God, I've been throwing up all night and I've had this and I've had that, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I read a story about a woman in America. Did I read it or saw it on television or something, who got the Ozempic and injected herself with 1 mil every day and ended up in hospital with severe pancreatitis or something.
Oh, gosh.
Pancreatitis, is that what it gives you if you...
Yeah, that's one of the the things.
With severe, she almost died because she overdosed on it. So, and you know, there are people just using it to get really thin because of the pressures of life and that constant barrage of, you know, youth and beauty. Bullshit, this is what you've got to look like. You've got to be thin to be successful. You've got to be thin to be beautiful. And then, you know, people come out who are part of the body positivity movement, who get slammed because, oh, you know, you're disgusting, you're too fat, you're this, you're that. And, you know, people still using fat as, you know, why don't you just go on a diet? People wouldn't say that to me because they know that I mean, nobody would dare say that to me, but when you've lived your whole life as a fat person, you do hear things, you hear people, you see people laughing at you, you get piggy noises made at you, you get all these different things. And your self-esteem takes a huge, huge hit. And I went to the entertainment industry. So you would think that that would make me go, oh, my God, I need to just go and live on a mountain for a year and just come back thin. But, you know, there are not very many women that are allowed to be seen in the entertainment field who are big, apart from Lizzo. You know, we saw her, and now she's lost a lot of weight. She's been working really hard at becoming a smaller woman. Good luck to her and the choice that she's made. And I guess, you know, I'm maybe some people would look at me and go, well, you're just lazy and you couldn't be bothered and, you know, you don't have any respect for your body or blah, blah, blah. But I don't give a shit what people say. What other people think of me is none of my business, honestly. I have to think about myself and I would not speak to a child the way that I've spoken to myself sometimes. You know, I've looked in the mirror and I've looked at my body and gone, you're disgusting. That's disgusting. You're horrible. You know, I would not speak to a child like that, but yet I would speak to myself like that. So I'm trying to just now, having gone through this Ozempic experience of trying that, and then I kind of feel a bit like a failure because I have other friends who are on Ozempic who have been extremely successful. And I just kind of go, well, okay, I don't have a thin body, but I have a beautiful mind and I have a heart full of kindness and compassion and I have a healthy mind. I have a healthy body. It's just a bigger body. It's just curvaceous and it's got fat and, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, and now I'm in a stage of my, you know, apparently I'm elderly now that I'm 70. And, you know, I don't have a partner and I, you know, I just try and live my life as best I can. And I look at that as that Ozempic experience as I tried it and it worked for me for a minute and then it didn't. And that's okay, you know. And if it works for people, good luck. I think my biggest worry about the future with people on Ozempic is what is the long term effect? What is the long term effect going to be on people? Excuse me, on people taking this drug for years. You know, how
I don't know.
How nobody knows. And that's the big mystery, isn't it, really? You know.
It is one of the big mysteries. do you think that there should be I'm just thinking out loud here. Do you think there should be possibly more variations in dosage? Obviously people have very different effects, you know, like very different.
That's interesting. I think that it's very possible that there needs
I'm thinking about flexibility. Does it need to be more of a flexible drug?
I think it does. I think that's correct. If you are just going onto a telehealth consult and getting a prescription for Ozempic and taking Ozempic without really having a sit down talk with the doctor about the fact that you need to lose 5 or 10 or 30 or 50 kilos. I think that's a very different conversation for every single person. And I think that there needs to be, well, what are your eating habits and how, if you're going to take this drug, this is what you need to do in conjunction with this drug. You need to drink X amount of fluid a day. You need to drink X amount of, you need to have this much protein. You have to make, you know, I'm sure that those people that are on Ozempic that are doing very low calorie diets, they're often having two or sometimes three shakes a day.
That's not sustainable.
Lady shake or man shake or whatever it is that they're having.
Yeah.
I think that the branding of the drug and the information that comes out with the drug could certainly be, if you're using this drug for weight loss, these are the guidelines. And these guidelines should be adhered to, that you need to drink to avoid, or, you know, for anybody really, even if you're diabetic.
Yeah.
Oh, to avoid these side effects, this is what you need to do. You need to drink 2 liters of water a day. You need to, you know, have whatever, a fiber supplement, or you need to have X amount of grams of protein. You need to have, you know, raw salad, or you need to, you know, like roughage. And none of that information is there. It's just this is the dosage. These are what the side effects are, and good luck. And they're not even saying good luck. They're just like, you know, if you experience any of these,
pay up.
See a doctor and good luck, you know. So I think that, definitely they could look at the guidelines. But, you know, the drug companies aren't interested in the consumer. The drug companies are only interested in the bottom line of, you know, the bottom dollar. And so that's why we have such a shortage here of that drug, is because they can sell it for over $1,000 in the United States, whereas here it's $135. So the profit margin is not great here. But I think that regardless of that, the drug company needs to think more about the consumer and the consumer health, rather than just what, this is what the drug does, boom. Because that's what drug companies do.
There's been a lot of talk in the media about Novo Nordisk paying doctors and to speak and paying, you know, like I think they spent, I can't remember the exact amount, but it was millions of pounds in the UK to pay for seminars and that they invited doctors to. What do you think of that kind of behaviour?
I think it's abhorrent. You know, that's not ethical. Where's the ethics in that? Where's the ethics in that?
If you knew that your doctor had attended one of those seminars, would you be less likely to believe what they said to you, or what do you think you would think?
If my doctor had attended one of those seminars, I'd be very surprised, because it's so not her. If my doctor had attended one of, look, I don't know. I don't think that it's very, I don't think that doctors should be paid to promote a drug.
I know that there's been a lot of doctors getting paid to do speaking, you know, that possibly they've gone to a seminar and they've been paid by the drug company to talk about the drug, you know, thousands of dollars usually.
Yeah, I think that I think that people in general are a bit like sheep when it comes to doctors. The yes doctor, no doctor. They don't ask questions. people do not ask questions of the doctor. They don't take a proactive approach to their practitioners. They just, you know, the doctor will say jump, and they'll go, yes, doctor, how high would you like me to? They don't even ask how high they're supposed to jump. They'll just, yes, doctor, of course, doctor. And, you know, I recently had an experience when I had my knees done where my doctor didn't listen to me, and I was put into a situation that was really horrible, and I had to check myself out of the hospital because of it. And when I told him about it, he was like, oh, no, but, you know, I blah, 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 blah. And I just said to him, no, you didn't listen to me, and you just treated me like I was an idiot.
I was talking to my sister, who's an ICU trained nurse. We were talking the other day about medical misogyny.
Yeah.
You heard that term?
No, I haven't heard the term, but
it's about where women in particular, obviously, women don't particularly get listened to in the medical field.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Look, especially, you know, look, I'm, as I said before, I'm 70. So I'm now experienced, and I don't look like your typical grandmother 70, you know. I've got very good skin, and I've got long, beautiful hair, and I'm a bit of a glamour, and shall be until the day I die. And when I like go to a specialist, for instance, I will say to them, tell me absolutely everything, because I want to show me on the X-ray or the MRI or whatever it is, because I want to visualize, I want to do meditation, and I want to visualize healing or blah, 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 blah. And some of them, when my knee first went out, when I first like had trouble and ended up going to hospital and going, ouch, I had a doctor who came in and was so patronizing to me, and sat, and I asked him a question, and he said, his answer to me was, if you were to ask the 150 doctors that practice this type of medicine what they thought, what do you think they'd say? And I said, I'm not asking them, I'm asking you. And he goes, you just need to get on my books. And I just went, okay. So I put myself onto his list, onto his operating list to get my knee done. And as I left the hospital, I'm like, you're not touching me with a 10-foot pole, mate. I'm going to go and get a second opinion. And I went and got a second opinion. And, of course, I didn't need surgery right then and there. And I told the other doctor this, who was a lovely guy, and I told him this, and he said, I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah, he was one of my fellows. He doesn't have a bedside manner. And he said, there was no manner. There were no manners, period. I think that I do agree that there is a definite misogyny that and ageism that happens to doctors. And I think that they forget that we're people. And when I said to him, you didn't listen to me and you put me in this position, he was shocked.
According to the FDA in the US, the gender of the people that report side effects are 2-to-1 women.
Right.
Supposedly mostly women, 2-to-1, suffer from the side effects of the GLP-1 semaglutide, or of GLP-1, sorry, not semaglutide.
Yeah.
Do you think that, you know, possibly, I mean, obviously they've found that out over time. Do you think that women, when they go in to ask for this drug, should possibly be aware of that?
Yes. Yes. I mean, look, I was aware of the side effects. I didn't know I didn't know about that statistic, obviously.
Yeah.
Until now. But I think that the more information that you're given, when you're faced with a choice to take a drug like this.
Yeah.
Or you're given the opportunity to take, you know, do you want to take it or not?
Yeah.
You should be armed. I think with any drug, you need to be armed with as much information as possible. But I don't think doctors have the time to be able to say, you know, unless you're fortunate enough to have a good practitioner that you've had for years and years and years who gives you 40 minutes of their time, the doctors are going to go, oh, you need to take this drug. Here's the prescription and, you know, contact me if you're having a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it does seem
they just don't have the time to go, well, the statistic is this and this is possibly what could happen. And, you know, they don't talk about side effects. I don't think I've ever, apart from when I did take this drug and I had the conversation with my doctor about it, you know, I do remember we did have a discussion about it. Mm. And she was like, you know, you go away and you read up about it and you make the decision. But yep. We had a discussion, but she didn't know that much about it either. She only had a patient who was on it, and this is 3 years ago.
Mm.
You know, before
I'm sure the discussion she would have with new patients now would be quite different, considering time has gone along. But I guess I'm wondering about, you know, I'm curious as to why a 300 kilo man and a 110 kilo woman can walk in and both be on the same dosage.
Yeah, absolutely. I know.
It seems.
You know, men historically lose weight much faster than women for some strange reason. Mm. So
women's gastric systems are known to empty slower than men.
Really? Mm.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, I think it was, I can't remember the exact percentage. I'm tempted to say 15% slower, but I'm not exactly sure. But I know that's another thing. So that's another reason why I'm going, well, maybe men and women should be on different dosages. Maybe you should be on a dosage for your weight. Maybe your sex should be an issue. You know, maybe, and it's, I think it's also been, actually, I know it's also been shown that race has got something to do with it. And age has got a little bit to do with it too. So maybe, you know, there should be a few things that they look at.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think that, you know, that definitely has to factor into it in the future. And until there is a care factor from the drug company about who is going to use this drug, then that I doubt that would even happen because I don't think they care.
Well, what they're supplying people are pens that they own the patent on, drug that they own the patent on.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time these dosages are fixed. You know, it's like you can turn it to one and then it's like, well, there's your dosage. So it's not very flexible. You can like do the click thing, but that's not what the drug company tells you to do. In fact, they say on their pamphlet, do not count the clicks.
Yeah.
So they're telling people to not do that. So I just think it would be great to have something that is far more flexible for various people.
I think so too. I think that would make a big difference. And I think that possibly if people stayed on the 0.25 dosage for longer, then that their system would adjust a little better, perhaps. And like you said, women and men having a different digestive system,
gastric emptying.
Yeah. If women and men are different in that regard, then surely that would have some kind of an impact on that, you know. So,
You'd imagine so. I'm just going to say thank you. Thanks for chatting to me. And hang on, I'll press stop recording for a minute. So that was my interview with lovely Shauna. I want to thank her for taking part and sharing her story, which is quite different to the other two stories that we've heard in my podcast. Next week, we're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about the problems that Novo Nordisk have had with paying companies and paying doctors. And we're going to also look at the lawsuits that have cropped up with Novo Nordisk and what they involve.
Investigating Ozempic was written and recorded by me, Bernadette Fisher. Please see all of the disclaimers and the links to the documents in the show notes. Thanks for listening.